So please, for those who are coming for the first time and those who are consistently forgetting, if your phone rings, even if it's on silent, at the time it's ringing, whatever is being said is not being recorded. So please, just switch off your cellular phones for this 1 hour to 1 hour 30 minutes engagement, and then we'll be free to get our calls back. We intend to have an early morning today, so please just switch your cellular phone off. Tommy, can we have that door closed? So we Comrade Deputy Minister in the President's, welcome. We're happy to have you here, to see you that other side, not the usual other side that we had become accustomed to seeing you from, but nonetheless, welcome. And to indicate that, yes, I've received the letter from Minister Chabane about his absence, which we accept and appreciate. That if ministers are not able to come, at least they should just do the simple thing of communicating that these are my challenges. So we welcome you here and the and the leadership of the National Youth Development Agency. As we always do, Comrade Deputy Minister, it's to start by introductions, so we know who is here. From your side, and then the Auditor General's office, and then members of Parliament. So when we engage, we at least know who is here, who is who, and then we can then take it up from there. So maybe I'll say let's start there with introductions from the side, and then we'll move on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson Skopa. Honorable Themba Godi, my name is Obed Babela. I'm the Deputy Minister in the Presidency for Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, amongst others responsible for some of the public entities such as the NYDA, and that is why I'm here today to come and listen, to observe, and then contribute where possible. But at the end of the introductions, I just want to say something, but let the introductions continue. Thanks.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Fiso Ngobo. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good morning. My name is Edward Mohawa. I'm from the Ministry of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation.
Good morning. My name is Ramukumba Katu. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of the NYDA.
Good morning, I'm Rachel Kalidas, the Independent Audit Committee Chairperson of the NYDA.
Good morning, my name is Ayanda Makaula. I'm the Acting Chief Executive Officer of the NYDA. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Kenny Morolong. I'm the Executive Deputy Chairperson of the NYDA Board.
AG.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, members. My name is Lawrence van Vieren. I'm the Business Executive responsible for this audit in the Auditor General.
Good morning. My name is Judy Buerta. I'm also responsible for the National Youth Development Agency audit.
Good morning. I'm Lebogang Madumo. I'm from the Auditor General.
All right. Dr. George.
Good morning, everybody. Dion George, member of SCOPA.
Good morning. My name is Pierre Rabi, and I'm a member of SCOPA.
Good morning. I'm morning. I'm Rehilo Mashiku, member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Gertrude Sahal, and I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Sipom Fundis, a member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Roy Ainsley, member of the committee.
Dumelang, Thapelo Chilwane, Koloko la
committee. Morning, Sarah Mangyana, member of this committee.
Morning, Eunice Nyalongo, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. I am Comrade Temba Godi. I chair the committee. I read your request, Comrade Deputy Minister. Very, very unusual, I must say. But you being you, I'll allow you a minute to do so.
No, it's not a long minute. I'm just saying that probably there might be confusion in the minds of people as to the absence of the CEO, and we have an acting CEO instead. And obviously, as you know, that the matter was decided upon by the Labour Court this week, reinstating the CEO of the NYDA. The matter is still before the executive authority for consideration and the reading of the judgment. So the CEO therefore remains home, not yet not suspended and not on leave, just home until the matters are clarified, because there are quite a number of issues that are in the judgment and also in some of the decisions of the NYDA board. We have reached that particular agreement, and that is why the acting CEO continues then to perform the duties of the organization, and then we are fully represented. Now the executive chairperson is also here just joining us. He will introduce himself, and therefore there shouldn't be issues around these issues, and therefore we are adequately represented. I just wanted to put that on record. Thank you.
Well, you're being preemptive, but we've heard you, but we'll nonetheless still talk to it. If Comrade Roy still so feels. Can you introduce yourself, sir?
Chairperson, my apologies. My name is Yoshin Pele, the Executive Chairperson of the NYGA. Just indicating I was unfortunately sent to GH42, the Good Hope Building, for some reason. So my apologies for the delay. But I'm here now.
Sent by who?
The receptionist at Parliament.
Okay, no, it's fine. Let's park that one. Comrade Roy, we are in your hands.
Chair, thank you very much. My first question has been answered already by the Deputy Minister regarding the position of Mr. Stephen.
Just pull the...
No, I won't dwell any more with that. Chair, this committee, SCOPA, oversees the financial statements of, correct me if I'm wrong, between 250 and 300 government departments and public entities. Of those, we are able, perhaps, to have hearings of 10 to 15 per year, per annum. So when the department or entity is invited to attend a SCOPA hearing, you need to feel quite honored. It is an indication of how important that we believe that that department and entity is. And in your case, you are extremely important when it comes to the economy of the country, and in particular to youth and youth employment. So we look very forward to our engagement with you today, and to discuss with you some of your problems, some of the plans you have going forward, perhaps to overcome those challenges. Chair, I'm going to deal with the Auditor General's report, which begins on page 86. I'm not going to cover all the items there, because my colleagues will also want to have their say and to ask some of the questions regarding the AG's findings. But I am going to kickstart the process, and I want to start by getting a comment. I don't know if it will be from the acting CEO
from the
CFO or the chairperson regarding item 8 on page 86 of the AG's report regarding material impairments. It's one
page
of...
Page 80?
Page 86. Page 86. While the NYDA's financial statements are not qualified, there are various red flags which the AG raises under emphasis of matter. And the very first one of those is this whole question of material impairments. And so if we could get a comment on the figure of 212 million plus there of impairments, the recoverability of which is doubtful. If we could get some kind of understanding as to why this happened and what steps are being taken to recover these amounts. Who am I asking the question to?
Well, the delegation is led by the chairperson.
So how did we get to this figure? What are you doing to recover as much of this as possible? I want to deal there with loans, not grants. I will have a question regarding grants when we've looked at this question of loans.
Thank you for the question. May I direct the CFO to please address that? Mr. Ramakumba will address the question.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the House. To adequately respond to the question that has been posed by the Honorable Member, it is important for me, Chair, to give the context to the loan book itself. So that when we...
As long as it will not be a long and winding response.
Yes, yes. So that when we speak to the why and what is it that we're doing, there's an understanding.
Maybe let's start with answering the why, then we can give the context if necessary.
Okay. Well, the why will speak to the context, Honorable Chair. The National Youth Development Agency is tasked with a responsibility of ensuring, amongst others...
No, we know that part.
Yeah.
That background, why you are established, what your mandate is, we understand all those.
Yeah. No, it is important, Chair, that I put that on the record for the members so that the answer makes sense.
You'll be surprised. If you are direct, it will still make sense.
Okay. Yeah. Chairperson, the loan book is impaired at a rate of about 90% because the beneficiary or the beneficiaries of the loan book or the loan financing program of the NYDA are generally young people who are high risk profile within the financing context. These are young people with no securities, no collateral. They walk through the doors of the NYDA with only a business concept that they believe can assist them to improve the socio-economic condition. So when these young people walk through our doors and they ask for the assistance of the NYDA, if we believe in our assessment that the business plan or the business concept that they have is indeed viable, we will fund them. Obviously, there are then other challenges that then arise in terms of the global economic conditions that affect the sustainability and the performance of these businesses that are owned by young people. Secondly, there is also a general challenge that these young people face in that generally industry out there, including the public sector, does not have much confidence in businesses that are owned by young people, so opportunities are quite few for them. So that is in the main some of the reasons why the loan book is not performing well. When it comes to the question of what is it that we are doing to ensure that we collect...
Before you go on to the second part of my question, you say you assess the viability of those people that apply for finances. You don't simply hand the money over.
Yes.
Just without too much detail, how do you assess an applicant's viability. What are the two or three major principles that you would apply?
The assessment will include, amongst others, the business plan itself or the concept. This will include the assessment of market viability. This might mean a conducting of due diligence visits to the premises where this young person intends to operate from, interactions with other industry players in that specific industry to assess whether indeed the concept is presented by this young person has an opportunity to be a sustainable and successful business venture. So those are some, if I just, you know, limit them, some of the things that we look at before we actually provide this young person with financing.
No assessment of the individual holding the business concept?
That is also done, Chair.
I thought that would be very much amongst your first three, because you're giving it to a person.
Yeah.
Not to a computer or a concept in a machine.
Yeah, the assessment is done. It's quite comprehensive. The assessment of the young person himself or herself is also done to also look at the risk profile. Even though we say that we will not necessarily turn these young people away simply because they have a high risk profile, we then will develop mechanisms that improves the possibilities or their chances of succeeding.
Which is clearly not very successful.
Do you require any kind of security from persons or institutions who can back up the sustainability, the probability that these loans will be repaid?
Yeah. We do require securities where it's available. But because we're a developmental institution, we will still fund young people who may not necessarily have the securities or the collateral or even surety ship if we believe that the concept is viable.
Okay, now before you go on to what you are doing to recover these amounts, am I correct in saying that part of this amount is an inheritance from other agencies, possibly, what was it, Umzo Bongo Fund? Is that part of your inheritance? If so, then what, just average, what sort of proportion of this impairment would be from that particular fund?
It is indeed correct, Honorable Chair, that part of the loan book that we're sitting with was inherited from the former Umsobumbu Youth Fund. In fact, the majority of the loan book is part of the inheritance. This also speaks to the funding patterns of the two institutions. The Umsobumbu Youth Fund would have been capitalized at inception at R1 billion, whereas the funding of the new entity, NYDA, would have started at about 238 million, and to date is sitting at about 396 million, and the NYDA has other additional responsibilities or mandate as per the Act as compared to the former institution.
Okay. Now, what are you doing to recover?
Or maybe before that, do you have an idea of the numbers of people who have applied vis-a-vis those that you have approved?
Look, the number of those that have applied, I do not have it.
On the average, generally.
Because
you see, the point I'm coming to is the screening process that you engage in and maybe the extent to which people are able to put brilliant proposals, but then when you come to execution, it becomes something else.
Yeah. Look, the beneficiaries of the loan book, I mean, the loan book is over 5 years old, or almost 5 years that is still active. So in that five-year period, some of those that would have come through in application processes would have been from the...
No, that's fine. I thought you would give me a 12-month, you know, review, not the whole 5 years. Continue, Comrade Roy.
What are you doing? What steps are you taking to recover these amounts?
Look, the processes that we are following are multi-pronged in that where these young people, or rather the beneficiaries from the loan book, are no longer paying, but in our assessment we find that they are able to repay what they owe to the agency. We are pursuing them through the legal processes. We have hired the services of a
legal firm that is assisting us in that regard. Other young people are, you know, as I've indicated before, because of the economic conditions, their businesses will be struggling. So they will then enter into negotiations with these young people to maybe revise the terms of the loans, either be the reduction of the monthly installments or and the extension of the loan term. In certain instances, you find that these businesses require some assistance to be able to generate enough cash flow for them to be able to honor the installments. So we're assisting with other non-financial services to these young people, like market linkages, linking them with business opportunities in the areas that they operate in, other non-financial services like marketing strategies and things like that. So the approach is multi-pronged. We're also looking at bringing in the services of debt collectors who will then assist us to also further pursue the beneficiaries of this loan book.
And are you reporting on a regular basis to the executive authority, to the audit committee, regarding the progress you have made in recovering these amounts? Is there regular engagement on this issue?
There is regular engagement, mainly at management level. We produce a portfolio at-risk report on a monthly basis. This serves before the Operations Executive Management Committee. It also serves at EXCO, and also with the Audit Committee now being on board, these reports will be continuously serving there for continuous monitoring of the performance of the loan book and assessment of the recoverability strategies that we're employing as an organization.
Okay, I want to jump now. Those are loans. I want to jump to page 94 of the annual report. And I want you to confirm what I'm reading there.
But I hope next time you... the pages of your annual report
will
be reader-friendly, who are no longer that young.
Yes, I know. Can you see?
I'm struggling to find the...
Page 94, subsequent events. Bullet point 1, 2, 3. The NYDA board has taken a decision to discontinue loan financing, and this is to be replaced with micro-grant funding. Now, can you just elaborate on that? I'm assuming there, clearly no more loans. It is now going to be a matter of handing out cash up to the value, I think, of 100,000 rand. Now, loans make me quite nervous, but at least with loans, there is the possibility of recovering the amounts through all the processes, legal and otherwise, that you've indicated. I'm a little bit nervous if what I'm reading there is correct, that you now intend giving people cash. There you are. There's 100,000 bucks. Go and try out your idea. I'm simplifying that. I'm sure it's not that way. Put my mind at ease that we're not simply standing there handing out money.
Chairperson, I'll take that question.
Sorry, I was...
No, fine. Chair, because of the strategic shift that was made away from loans to grants, you're quite correct. It's not simply handing out money. The strategic shift, it's 25 million rand that has been allocated to support at a minimum of 500, but with business development support and mentorship, a maximum of 37,000. The way it will work will not simply be to hand out money. There's a thorough screening process, which involves a three-day entrepreneurship development training program prior to money being disbursed. It also involves pre-mentorship and post-mentorship. And then it involves a 24-month hand-holding period, so to speak, for the young entrepreneur after money has been disbursed. The strategic shift was in line with our mandate to say, as a development agency and not a bank, we are afforded the opportunity to take risks because the youth represent the future, and being a representative of the future, it is can only benefit society to take such risks. And so the strategic shift was to say that given the low culture of entrepreneurship amongst young people, currently sitting at 15% with the region's average at about 50%, the mandate of the NYD allowed us to take such a big risk.
There's an agency, KZN, where I'm from, that also issues grants. it does give the prospective business person the money. They pay the supplier. Have you considered that in your approach to these kinds of grants, that you interact with the suppliers and you pay the suppliers the funds, and that there's no direct link in terms of receiving cash between the recipient and the NYDA?
Thank you, Chair. The CEO will also add. The grant program is targeting three types of young people: those who have intentions of starting a business, those who are at the nascent or the early stages of entrepreneurial activity. And the program is actually linked to the loan program of the IDC and CIFA. The aim is to really target those young entrepreneurs who are starting very small and micro enterprises. So it's hair salons, your chicken dust, etc., in those communities. And so we would not simply just allocate the maximum funding, but in some instances, and in most instances, it would be directly to the young entrepreneur. Again, with us being afforded the opportunity to take such risks. But the CEO will also identify instances which are different as opposed to what I've just explained.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add to the answer, in instances where a young person would walk into our branches and seek a grant, what we normally do to curb the issue of young people not being careless with the money that the NYDA disperses, we would then, for instance, if that young person is running a hair salon, that the young person would go out and source quotations in terms of the equipment that they would need. Then the NYDA would then look at those three quotations and follow our PFMA processes so that that young person, we can buy the equipment for them. That way we avoid dispersing money directly into the young person's bank account. In instances where a young person would be looking, for example, if they're looking to for capital investment, then we would look at dispersing the cash. If a person says, I need a certain amount of money, for instance, if I have a spa, a shop, and I'm looking to buy stock, then would be able to give that person money so that they can be able to buy stock. Where there's cases of equipment, then we'll be able to give that to pay the supplier directly so that we curb the risk of having the young person spending the money carelessly. Thank you.
Okay. Those are my questions on loans and grants. Some members have made notes. There may be follow-up questions later.
Sure.
I want to move to my next point in the annual report. Repeatedly, you are making material misstatements in your annual financial statements. It's not the first time it's happened. It's happened before. Why is this happening? It would indicate to me that you don't have any processes on a daily basis, processes on a monthly basis, to ensure that you have complete and accurate accounts. Now, can you give us some, and a lack of internal control. Can you give us some kind of assurance that we are not going to see this again, this particular finding, emphasis of matter by the AG? As I said, it has happened before, and while you have an unqualified audit, in our briefing from the AG, he characterized this regular material misstatements in your financial statements as being financially impaired. The entity is financially impaired. Is very serious. I think it's just below a qualification. So indicate to us, please, why this is happening and respond to my, as I read the matter, that you are not doing basic daily, monthly bookkeeping.
Thank you, Chair. We indeed acknowledge the finding, and we have been working to address the issues. We have had capacity issues. We have addressed those. We have subjected people to training when needs be. We have also restructured the structure of finance in order to make sure that people are better placed in positions where they can be maximized by the organization. Also with the intention of ensuring full compliance with the PFMA and the accounting standards. But over and above that, we have noted the recommendations of the Auditor General, and we have adopted those, chief amongst them being the compilation of the financial statements, full financial statements on a monthly basis.
Are you seriously telling us that up to now you have not done reconciliations, for example, on a monthly basis?
No, those have been done. The challenge with the errors has been that the compilation of the financial statements, the annual financial statements, has in the past always been left to after the end of the financial year. So in that process, because you are now capturing all the the accounting records at the financial statement level, 12 months later, there are possibilities of errors, mainly because the PFMA will require submission of those financial statements on the 31st of May. So basically, you only have 2 months to make sure that these financial statements are compiled and they are compiled correctly. There are proper reviews that are done by senior management. So the fact that it has been done after year end has resulted in limited reviews by senior management. Some of the adjustments that have been passed after year end are those that as management we identified after the submissions and we engaged the auditors to say we want to correct this and that. So, but the lessons learned there are that we need to be a lot more proactive, and the Auditor General has made a recommendation to us which we believe will work, that of preparing financial statements on a monthly basis, and that's what we'll be doing moving forward. On a monthly basis, we'll be preparing those financial statements and we'll just be rolling forward transaction of the month that has preceded. So we are confident, Chair and Honourable Members, that this matter will be dealing with it for the last time.
Okay, third point that I want to raise is your expenditure management, page 87, in particular irregular expenditure. Now, it is correct that your irregular expenditure has been reduced from 133 million to 62 million. But don't congratulate yourselves too much, because nowhere in the PFMA does it say that you must meet its prescripts by installments. That, okay, fine, I have 100 million irregular this year, I'm okay, next year it's 50, the following year it's 10, the next year it's 5. I needn't quote, I've got my PFMA with me, and I'm sure you know it even better than I do. It says must. It says you must take steps to prevent irregular expenditure. So yes, happy that there's a reduction. It's not good enough. It's not good enough, one, that it is still at 62 million. Two, it's not good enough that the AG makes a finding that there have been no disciplinary steps against officials who have incurred or permitted this irregular expenditure. That perhaps more than anything else bothers me, that for this massive amount, from the 133 million, nobody has been held accountable. Why is that? Why is that? PFMA says you must hold people accountable. Yes. So if you could just respond to my two parts, but I'm saying it's not good enough. PFMA says you must right now stop irregular expenditure, not over a period of time. No reduction. You must stop it. One. Two. Why no action against those people responsible?
I'll take the first part, and then the executive chair will take the second part. Honourable Members, as the NYDA, we are not celebrating the reduction from 133 to 62.
You're not celebrating, but you congratulate yourselves occasionally.
I'll
read the report. You are very happy. Hey, we've done it. It's a major achievement from 133 to 62. You know, I gather I'm joking.
We are not celebrating. We are just noting progress, progress that still require a lot to be done, because the ultimate goal and objective from management is to achieve clean governance, and the intention and the goal remains one, that of completely eradicating irregular expenditure. The irregular expenditure is characterized by a number of factors. Amongst those is that some of the amounts contributing to the irregular expenditure would be contractual agreements or relationships with service providers that would have been inherited from the former Umsobomvu Youth Fund. Those contracts would have had a lifespan, and terminating them would have meant particular consequences of terminating those contracts beforehand. So the process that has been adopted by the organization has been one of saying that as and when these contractual agreements comes to an end, we follow proper processes of appointing service providers as prescribed by the PFM and Treasury regulations. Amongst others, it is the non-compliance, as it were, where you would find that in certain instances where we were required to source three quotations and things like that, we did not comply with those. What we have done is to prepare a report that speaks to the current year that we are reporting on and the previous years, which then indicates which transaction contributed to the irregular expenditure, what are the divisions that were responsible for those, and we are then asking executive managers responsible for those divisions to give an explanation as to why they did not comply with the policies, and beyond that, then the moving forward, the CEO's office will be driving the process of ensuring accountability and corrective action for those who are responsible for current irregular expenditure. That will include, amongst others, disciplinary processes when necessary, but each case will be evaluated on its own merit and an appropriate decision will be arrived at.
It's clear that throughout this annual report there is an indication of what proportion of these things that are happening are as a result of the Umsobomvu Fund.
No. Correct. Right. If you look on page, says that this page is 145.
Yeah. Does it indicate?
You realize that 62 million is what they incurred in the last 12 months of the financial year. That which came from the previous years, which might include 2011, 2012, 2010, 2011. It's 133 million.
You've anticipated my question. I wanted to ask them, is the 62 million yours?
Oh, okay.
Or theirs?
The 62 million is the irregular expenditure for the 2012-2013 financial year.
It does not include.
If you look at the same page that the chair is referring to, there is an opening balance there, which then accounts for all the other prior years that irregular expenditure has happened, which will be cleared once the National Treasury has provided a condonement. We have written to National Treasury requesting the condonement, having followed also the practice note, which indicates that the authority that should have authorized the expenditure the first time should be the one that then approves. So we have firstly written to, depending on the different transactions, to the CEO, those that should have been approved by him, and to the executive authority, the accounting authority. And subsequent to that, once they have done their condonement, we subjected or submitted this to National Treasury. National Treasury has requested some detail on some of these transactions, and that detail has been done, and it has been submitted to them. We are awaiting their response in that regard.
Well, I don't overemphasize condonement. We don't like condonement on this committee. And that 62 million is yours.
Yes.
It is yours. So you continue to incur irregular expenditure. As the NYDA, forget what happened with Umsobomvu Fund. You are still not taking effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure. And I want to return to page 145.
Sure.
145. There's a total lack of detail there regarding irregular expenditure. Well, let me start with fruitless and wasteful. At least there's some detail there with regard to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We have indicated there, for example, that SARS penalties and late payments incurred wasteful expenditure. You indicate there that rental offices for your premises in George also incurred wasteful expenditure. Let's just start with that and explain to us, if you can, how those amounts arose and why in other annual reports, we would have another column there, disciplinary measures taken. Here again, nothing done. I know it's not a great amount, it's 4 million in total now, but this indicates to us, one, why you have paid penalties to SARS, why you spent the 603,000 rand wastefully on your George premises, and why no action has been taken against those people responsible.
Thank you, Chair. I think I will start with the effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure. I must take this committee into confidence and indicate that we have started implementing corrective measures or preventative measures to prevent irregular expenditure.
Why were these measures not there all along? Like just walking up.
Look, I mean, we when we came in 2 years ago, within the finance space, there would have been a leadership vacuum for a period of almost a year or just over a year. The policies have been there, but I think that the lack of that leadership had led to a culture of non-compliance because there was no that direct leadership. So we had to start by correcting
but
that.
But there was management, was there not?
Before I was appointed as the CFO of the NYDA, the acting CFO was last week at the NYDA in December 2010. So between that time and June 2011, when I came in, there would have been that. So there was somebody who was appointed to act, but obviously that leadership at that level was not there. So obviously when we came in, we had to address that issue first. We also needed to address the issue of policies and procedures that are in place to make sure that indeed, there is compliance to treasury regulations, PFMA and accounting standards and so forth and so forth. So we have implemented those. We have been implementing those for the past 2 years. And I can indicate that as we sit now, on our regular monthly reporting of irregular expenditure, we are only sitting at about 4 million. We are not celebrating still. We are 6 months or so into the financial year, and we are managing that. And the intention is to try and keep it at that level, with an intention that as we go into the new financial year, we are able to completely eradicate this irregular expenditure. So we are seeing results, and we are confident that...
It's never too late to investigate and hold people to account. And we would urge you to do that in the case of your fruitless and wasteful expenditure and also with regard to your irregular expenditure. For example, the 600,000 rand at George offices, what happened there?
The 600,000 rand for the George offices, what happened here was that at the time of the formation of the NYDA, I think 2009, at the time, there was an intention by the management of the time to take the NYDA to all other provinces and other areas. In this regard, the mistake that was done was that a rental agreement of a period of 5 years was entered into with the owners of this building in anticipation that the request for additional funding from National Treasury will be granted. It just so happened that National Treasury did not provide that additional funding that was requested. However, this contract had already been signed. We have investigated possibilities and options of terminating this contract, but it is an erroneous contract. Terminating it will still subject us to a large amounts of money that needs to be paid. So we have then taken the decision to allow it to run its course. It is expiring at this lease in the course of this financial year.
And are you using those premises?
We are not using those premises because
you're standing there empty.
We don't have the funds to fund the operations of that office.
So you cut your losses.
Yeah.
So this is interest, not the rental, or is it interest and rentals, or it's rentals?
This is rentals.
Who signed the contract?
The contract was signed by the former CEO of Umsobomvu, and at the time I think he was the acting CEO of NYDA when NYDA was just formed.
I thought you'll comment further on it. But I just wanted to come in on some of the remedies that I thought then the accounting officers will have also expressed.
On fruitless and waste.
Yeah.
On the fruitless and waste.
Yeah. The issues of also sourcing in the Treasury's technical unit to come in there to also help to normalize and then therefore that to capacitate and then build systems that will then ensure that going forward we no longer then have such incidences occurring. And I think it's one element, and the Treasury is in agreement, and then they will very soon be entering into a memorandum of understanding around that type of an assistance to really help in that particular issue to as one of the remedies. And we think, therefore, that going forward, at least some of the elements that are arising now or that have happened in the past will then be reduced and to a level of zero.
Acceptable.
Yeah.
Okay. We are very disappointed with your detail, no, lack of detail with regard to irregular expenditure. You give some detail, as I said, with fruitless and wasteful, but those are, in relation to irregular expenditure, fairly small amounts. We would have expected a long list, one or two pages, as to how this amount of irregular expenditure is broken up. In the second column, we would have expected disciplinary measures, but we have none of that. Could you furnish us with, not now, maybe the next 2 weeks or so, with a breakdown of this irregular expenditure? If you could do that.
The 62 million.
Whatever. And I would ask, for the sake of asking anyway, and I know the answer, you have taken no measures against anybody responsible for this irregular expenditure. There have been no disciplinary measures. Nobody held accountable.
Chair, if I may take the question, to just also agree that when we were appointed on the 1st of April as a new board, one of the five principles or values that we adhered to was excellence. And excellence in this, I think for the purposes of this committee, is a clean audit for us, not an unqualified audit. That is our aim. That's where we are going to. So certainly we are not even happy. We are just challenging ourselves. It's not going to happen in the coming financial year because the CFO has indicated it's 4.2 already. But what we did, just to add on and then address the question directly, we further capacitated our audit committee when we came in as the board. Mr. Kalidas is here to conduct more audits, but also to strengthen the auditing, in the internal auditing in the NYGA. That has led to a number of interventions, or at least outcomes, resulting in the irregular being so low. The report also indicates the appointment of a new senior manager for supply chain, and that's also adding value as we speak, as well as the introduction of a social and ethics committee to improve ethics in the NYGA. But we also were, and I mean this has already been out in the public space, that as the board, we were told that the buck stops at the CEO in terms of governance. And we then instituted corrective measures. Of course, the disciplinary inquiry continues, and the outcomes will then be presented at a later stage.
Well, I see that is one bit of detail you do give at the very bottom of page 145, where you do single out your suspended CEO for the 13.1 million. Now, as I understand it, without authority, am I right, he converted 13.1 million in loans to grants. Is that correct? The very bottom of page 145. Regular expenditure incurred in the current year included 13.1 million rand, resulting from contravention of Section 56 of the Public Financial Management Act, and as a result, the NYDA Accounting Authority suspended the Chief Executive Officer, Stephen Ngubeni. Why are you looking so puzzled?
Chief, because the disciplinary, not to be puzzled, just in terms of the process, there is an inquiry into the matter. I would, of course, want to afford the opportunity to the employee to state his side of the case, so we are not want to preempt.
No, of course not. Without going into the particulars of the matter, are there no checks and balances that prevent an individual, it's a matter of principle, an individual from taking this kind of step? That he can walk into the filing cabinet himself and just sign a few things and loans are converted to grants. I mean, what concerns me there is not the individual, but it's the principle that there are no checks and balances allowing this kind of thing to happen. So I'm hoping that as part of your inquiry, more importantly, is that this should not happen in the future. That is my main concern, checks and balances.
I'll hand over to the CFO just to elaborate. But I think it's also cultural change that is required in the NYK, part of the new work ethos, the ethics that we're trying to establish. And in time, certainly, it must be noted that we will have a culture or a climate that ensures good governance practices at all times. CFO will elaborate in more detail.
No. I think it was more of an observation.
Rhetorical.
Than a question. I think you've covered it.
Yes. Chair, I want to end there. I'm going to reserve my right to ask questions on supply chain management policy if my colleagues don't.
Okay.
I know I have a colleague sitting quite close to me who's very keen on investigations. He or she will ask those, but if they don't, I will come back.
That's fine. Your rights are reserved. All right. Let's see. Mimangena, Dr. George is a must. Dr. Rabi, Kumri Chula. Mimangena.
Chairperson, thank you. Mr. Ramukumba, what is Ramukumba?
Let's say CFO.
CFO. The first one should be, why did you people appoint a board after 11 months? For the 11 months that was there, what was actually happening? And then the last one is on the debt collector. I'm a little bit worried about it. If those loans are to be paid back and you are unable to get those people to pay them back, you are going to get a debt collector who will go around collecting those monies. Do you think that we are going to gain anything out of that? Or can't we, maybe are we not going to end up being losers? Because the debt collector also wants something for himself, to go on the bicycle and go around collecting those monies. Thank you.
Yeah, I think answer the second part. The first part, I think the deputy minister is here to talk to it. I mean, how do you pay your debt collector?
Look, we are going to subject
let's just keep it formal. You don't have to look at anything. Just respond to any question.
Yeah. We are going to be subjecting the process to a competitive bidding process. We are in favor of a model where debt collectors are paid a commission on the basis of what they've been able to collect. So that is the approach that we take.
But you, from the beginning, you said that these young people have no security. I mean, what are you going to collect?
Some of them, Chair, on the preliminary work that we have done, some of them we have identified, especially those who benefited during the Umsobomvu days when the agency was in a position to fund up to 5 million rand. What we have identified is that some of these beneficiaries, even though they may no longer be operating the businesses that we funded them for as the agency, they are now running other successful businesses. So those are the ones that we think that there is something that can be recovered from them.
Okay.
Listen, let's say they gave me that loan, okay? I did buy some assets, and then I've been using that. And now I've left everything. I don't have anything at this moment as I'm talking to you. I've sold them out. What is it that's going to happen to me? I've sold everything out, and maybe you thought I'll be having a desk there, a machine there that is old, and you'll take that and sell it on auction and get something. But I don't have anything at the moment. Nothing. I'm not talking about those people who left this job, this business, and now created another business on their own. I know with those ones it's easy to get your money back. But what about the one who has got nothing at all? Thank you.
Look, I think the process is to try and deal with each transaction or each case on its own merit. Reports will be submitted to the board, and the board will make determination. It is a given that some of these loans will have to be written off because we can't collect anything. Some of them you may find that indeed these people are no longer trading, but on personal wealth, they probably have other assets that can be used to recover some of the amounts that they owe to the organization.
Right. Okay. Comrade Deputy Minister, why, after the interviews were done, did it take so long to have a board?
I think that question will be more relevant to Parliament itself. Parliament appoints the NYDA board. It's not the president. It's not the executive authority. When the vacancies were due 4 months or 6 months in advance, we did give notice to Parliament, and hence Parliament constituted a body then to start the process. And that body then to meet our advertising, and then people did.
But was it not the fact that people had been identified and were waiting for the appointment of the chairperson and the deputy? Was it not where the snake was?
No. The snake was between the other house, the NCOP, not processing with the matters as recommended by the other house, which is your National Assembly, and it got stuck for almost 7 months in that particular environment. So there was no way that we could do anything because the Parliament was being obviously threatened with litigation at the time by some people who were aggrieved when they shortlisted. Then the recommendations were made by National Assembly. They quickly jumped in and then litigated or threatened to litigate Parliament, and then Parliament had to stall the process to allow for the hearings or the processing of those issues, and it took forever. It was a frustrating point, I must say, but then obviously there's in the law that obviously Parliament must go through those particular processes. And once then the Parliament was able to process within a matter of 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we're able then to appoint the board and also the chair and the deputy chair.
All right, okay, no, that's fine. Dr. George?
Thank you, Chairperson. As I listen to this issue about the loans and who gets the loans and the fact that so many of them have to be, written off, that sounds very risky to me. Clearly, it's a very risky process. Now, what control is in place to make sure that you don't end up with a situation where loans are given to individuals with business plans that are clearly not going to fly anywhere, but that the individuals happen to be connected to people in the department? I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying that that can happen very easily, given what I have heard. So what control is in place to make sure that something like that doesn't arise?
Chair, firstly, we stopped loan funding as the NYDA, so we will not be dispersing.
Well, that's fine. Let's apply that to the grants as well. Grant. I think the principle will be the same.
Sure. I'll perhaps ask the CEO or CFO to add. The grant system is structured in a manner that allows committees at the branch level, at 14 branches across the country.
14.
The process is such that branches have branch grant committees that will be established. These committees are chaired by branch managers. Many of them are technocrats, highly skilled in what they do. These committees also will ensure...
What skills do they have, generally?
Chair, generally it's your management skills that are required for NYDA branch, it's youth development expertise.
What's management? Management can be anything. Management, business management...
Well, Chair, the process is one that has a defined criteria for branch managers. The criteria, of course, is the requisite qualifications over and above just a simple bachelor's degree, for example. There's a whole list of other criteria that one has got to fulfill. Once that criteria is fulfilled, there's a committee at head office chaired by the executive manager for service delivery channel who then determines who the branch manager is. So it's quite a lengthy human resource process. In fact, we are in the process of filling the branch manager for Kimberley. So we've been, as a new board, sort of getting a better understanding. And I can safely say that in that process, we are quite confident that we are appointing the right people in those process, through those quite stringent and comprehensive processes.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think that's a good idea, that you get the right people into place. But what are you going to be doing to be testing that? So in other words, these grants are, you know, given to various people, et cetera, by somebody. What testing are you doing to make sure that something doesn't go wrong in that process, as I described?
Thank you. The grant funding comes out, or we implement it as a suite. Amongst others, one of the prerequisites or requirements for grant funding is that the beneficiary must be allocated a mentor. That mentor must be within the area that this beneficiary is residing in. There will be that constant monitoring of the business activity of this young person, and the NYD will be expecting monthly and quarterly reports on the progress of this business venture. We have designed an incubating period of 24 months, so all beneficiaries of the grant program will be receiving that hand-holding assistance through the mentorship program, as well as the grant officer's regular visits to this business activities of these young people for a period of 24 months. Only after 24 months, we will be releasing these young people to then continue managing and operating by themselves, and then we'll provide them with additional assistance as per their requirements.
Thank you very much. And then my final question is on page 136 of the financial statements, where there's detail of bonuses and expense allowances. Now, I have heard a lot this morning about improvements to governance that are required, quite a lot of them. So I'm just wondering why it is that everybody, or almost everybody listed on page 136, under the other key management personnel, and on the next page, other key management personnel also, divisional directors and senior management, nearly all of them got bonuses. Now, what is the criteria for bonuses? And it certainly seems that they're quite generous. So bonuses on the one hand, and then the other one is an expense allowance column. What are those expenses for? Because they do seem to vary. I can't find a correlation between the salary and the expense, so I'm assuming it's for something, but if you can just explain it. So criteria for bonus, and then what are these expenses? Thank you.
I will speak to the allowance expense, and I will hand over to the acting CEO to speak to the question of the bonus and the criteria. The expense allowances are reimbursive allowances that employees would be given on when they've used their own funds to undertake business activities.
Thank you. I'll just go straight to the question of performance bonuses. Performance bonuses are paid on the basis of a performance management contract that's agreed upon between the employer and the employee, which is the CEO at the time, as well as the executive manager. So for us in our organization, it's not uncommon for us to pay bonuses. Staff get an increase of 5.6%. That is part of the bargaining process. And then one would have to sign a performance management contract. And then upon presenting a portfolio of evidence of work done, then we'll be able to award that person based on the scoring they give themselves, just opposed to the final scoring that the CEO would give the executive manager on the basis of evidence as well as performance, as well as and then the organizational performance is also factored in. Thank you.
What's the difference between the performance that an employee should deliver that would qualify him or her for their monthly salary vis-a-vis that which would qualify a person for a bonus?
Basically, what the scoring is a total of 5. So we would look at the each and every in the executive manager's operational plan. We would then look at what delivery has been done and to what level. There is a level on which the executive manager is judged on 3 criteria: whether that person is the level of service is complete or average, or if the person has exceeded targets. So we closely look at the operational plan of the executive manager in terms of to what level have they met the expectation that they have exceeded target based on the APP, and then would award that person. The person would then score themselves, and then the CEO would then moderate the score based on the portfolio of evidence. And then we would give that person on the basis of the cap is 25%, in which we award bonuses. This year, based on the affordability of the organization as well as the performance, we had to reduce that to 18% with an overall score of 4.
Right. I hope Parliament is listening. We have no bonus. We get no bonus for whatever we do.
I just have a follow-up question on that. I understand you're talking about a criteria for bonus, and we have also seen that there have been some governance problems. So when the bonus was done for the people or persons responsible for financial good governance, did they get the full bonus, or did they get it cut on the basis of their non-performance? Or how does that actually work?
The performance bonus of the executive managers got cut. Normally, the maximum amount in which we award bonuses is up to a 25%. So this year, this financial year, we kept it at 17-18% due to the fact that there hasn't been a 100% exceeding of our target, but the organization itself, according to its APP, is sitting at 85% of its performance, with 47 KPAs being met over KPAs, 55 KPAs that have been set by the organization. So there has been a level of a reduction in terms of bonus payouts. The more executive managers don't perform, the more we are going to reduce the number of the percentage in which we award bonuses.
We've seen some of your performances in the annual report, and I'm sure a lot of them were exceeded with very, very high percentages. I'll wait to hear what comrades have to ask on that, because it becomes very easy to perform beyond set targets.
I have one final question.
Sure.
On the expenses. So I understand that you're saying is that if somebody incurs an expenditure on the basis of something they have to do, they get reimbursed. Now, I'm just looking at some of these on page 136. There's 113,000 Rand. It's nearly 10,000 Rand a month. What? Give me an example of what it would be that you would get reimbursed for. Thank you.
So thank you, Chair. I think the 113 that is specifically made reference to the executive in question is the head of service delivery channel. So you would find that this executive would move from one branch to the next, and in certain instances they would use their own vehicle and not a hired vehicle of the company, and that would be, amongst others, the contribution to this kind of amount.
So it's more travel reinvestment. I see you then travel a lot yourself, do you?
No, it's not a lot.
Oh, really? Okay. All right, Dr. Ravi.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to first just a general comment. Chair, this organization has been in existence for 4 years, so you expect a certain degree of maturity already and so forth. Now, I'd like to turn the... I'd like to ask the members and the officials here to turn to the page 10, 9 and 10 of the Auditor General's report, and I'd like to read from it. This is regarding investigations, ongoing investigations within the department. Allow me to read the final one. A review was conducted with regards to the awarding of contracts related to significant projects of the entity. The review aims to establish whether the awarding of the contracts were within the relevant supply chain management prescripts and whether there may have been irregularities in respect of such awards. My question, Chair, is what was the outcome of this particular review? And I think it's important for the community, for the committee to take note of it, because it seems to me that everything is not in order regarding the supply chain management within this particular entity. I'd like to hear what the CFO has to say about this. Thank you, Chair.
I will defer that to the executive chairperson.
Well, Chair, I'm glad also that Ms. Kalidas is here. But we, in terms of the supply chain matters, we had raised this when we came in as the board to say that we tasked the management to completely review, but also to do so constructively, so that where it was indicated that there were capacity issues, we would then allow for the appointment, for example, of a senior manager for supply chain who would oversee the supply chain issues. And we in fact were informed a few weeks back that that appointment had taken place. So in order to address the capacity issues. But we then also tasked the audit committee to look at this matter. And Ms. Kalidas will further elaborate in terms of, you know, the findings of the audit committee and how the independent audit committee has been assisting with the supply chain matters. Ms. Kalidas.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, this paragraph in particular relates to the disciplinary processes of the CEO. As one would know from the media reports that there were two contracts in question, you know, that were investigated, which relate to supply chain processes possibly being flawed. So the paragraph here reflects the investigation process that was concluded at time of the Auditor General expressing the opinion. Unfortunately, because of the process being within disciplinary hearings, there was not as much detail provided in here to allow that process to be able to unfold. What the audit committee has done is that they've ensured that internal controls within the organization are being reviewed. To ensure corrective action going forward and to prevent such issues from reoccurring, it's important that all the policies and procedures within the NYDA are updated and that they are implemented correctly. To ensure that, we've also capacitated the internal audit unit. We've appointed an outside service provider to assist with skills and capacity to ensure that internal audit is able to conduct regular audits to detect where there are issues of management override of controls or where delegations and policies are not being adequately followed so that it's actually brought to our attention and the corrective measures can be taken. Thank you.
So in a sense, you have not capacitated the internal audit unit. You have just got consultants in.
Honourable Chair, the capacitation is through a co-sourcing arrangement whereby the consultants work with our internal capacity to build skills, for example, on specialist areas of investigations as well as IT audits. So they are working together on the same audit to ensure that there's practical skills transfer on a day-to-day basis.
Right. Yes.
Chair, thank you, but I don't think my question has been answered. What was the result of the findings, the investigations? Is it possible for the committee to inform us what happened there or not?
Thank you for the question. The specific outcome was documented in the review report that was conducted by our co-source service provider, SABNT. That was the report which was used as a basis for the suspension of the CEO as well as the disciplinary processes. So I think, you know, it would be difficult for me to go into the details in terms of the recommendations and the outcome of that report, given the legal matters pending with the CEO.
The legal matters pending with the CEO.
Sorry, Chair. Can you repeat?
Are there legal matters pending with the CEO?
Well, the inquiry continues, Chair.
I thought you dismissed him, didn't you?
come in. Yeah. Yes, the board did take a decision to dismiss him, and then he approached the labor court, and then the labor court reinstated him. And
also, I understand from the grapevine that the NYDA was not represented in court. Is that correct?
It's not correct.
Oh, good. It's not correct. So therefore, the labor court reinstated him?
So they have reinstated him to his status quo, and then the NYDA is not appealing, therefore, and because there's no appeal on the side of the NYDA, NYDA is intending to pursue the matter through a public hearings, as was the case originally before the expulsion. And that is the process in which the disciplinary process to continue as were intended. And that is why, therefore, the matters remain subjudicated to some extent that we are unable to delve into to depend to the issues.
Okay, Comrade Shulwan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to ask on the investigation on item number 26, page 88, on the investigation which has been concluded internally, and it has been handed over for the law enforcement agency. I'm just not sure whether it's the one that was, say, you were having a service provider that was running the investigation, or it's another matter that is separate from the one that includes the CEO.
Thank you, Chair. It is a separate matter. This matter relates to matters where the loan processes, employees would have colluded with other people, where loans would have been granted. The investigation had been concluded on the part of the NYDA. It has been referred to SAPS for criminal charges, so the matter is with SAPS right now.
Are there any suspension in regards for those people who are involved within your own part of investigation, or are you still waiting for SAPS to deal with it?
At this point, there are no suspensions as yet, but I think maybe the CEO might add there. But the process, now that it has been concluded and has been handed over, there has been a process of, I know that I think one of the staff members who was involved in this subsequently resigned from the employment of the NYDA, and the other employee was in a process of, I think, being a state witness for the police, and there were some arrangements with regard to the case at hand. But I think it's safe to say that the SAPS currently is handling the matter.
Thank you, Chair. I just hope, CFO, that the one that has resigned will be able to recover the money that is involved in within that confusion that we have. If I just hope that doesn't get his or her own pension funds before we recover our own money as the NTG. Number two, Chairperson, is on the investigation.
Before you go to number two, I think the fact that the other employee is going to be a state witness bears no relevance to your internal disciplinary processes. So there is no reason why you should not be taking measures against him or her, because the state witness thing has to do with the criminal part that the SAPS is taking care of. So we still expect that as an organization, in terms of your own internal processes, you should be able to take action. Yes, continue, Comrade.
Thank you, Chairperson. The second one is on the investigation by the Public Protector on the issue of the World Festival of Youth and Students, which was held in 2010. As a committee, we would like just to get a brief progress, what's happening in regard, because I can see here in terms of the report, it has extended up to the current financial year. in terms of this investigation by the public protector, if maybe we can get the progress report in this regard.
Chair, through you, we had reported at the Appropriations Committee that the sooner the matter of the Wufti Festival is concluded by the public protector, the better for the NYTA. We have submitted all that we were required to submit, which we reported, correctly so. The public protector has written to us to say that all the information is listed and at a suitable time the report will be tabled. And of course, we also you know, have emphasized that it does play a significant part in the organization moving on. A festival of 2010, for that matter, when a new board is appointed in 2013, doesn't really help us to reposition and reconfigure the organization and change its image so that we are able to actually build and restore the credibility and capability going forward. So perhaps even the committee may assist us in that regard, Chair. But we have complied where we were asked to.
Chairperson, maybe we can say as a committee, if we can get an update progress if once the matter has been concluded, if they can send us that part of the report. My other question, Chairperson, is on procurement and contract management. That is page 87. You see, when you check item 18, 19, and 20, there were a contravention of treasury regulations in terms of there were no invitation for competitive bidders. There were no bidders who submitted false information, if I can say, to in an intention to defraud the entity. Abuse of supply chain management systems, and for them also not to comply with the treasury regulations. If maybe we can get an explanation in that regard.
Thank you, Chair. I think, again, the issues within the supply chain management generally are affected by the same challenges. For an example, where the report says that competitive bids were not applied, part of it will be those contracts that initially, the first time they were entered into, competitive bidding process was not followed, but we are still incurring expenses on them in the current financial year. Those would be part of those. Amongst others here is the application of a deviation process, where in our view we would have held the view that is, the matter is urgent, it needs to be done in a short space of time, which did not allow for us to go through the normal tendering process and things like that. But when it was subjected to the test by the Auditor General, it did not pass the test. So those would be some of the issues. Part of the improvements that we are doing in this regard is that currently the delegation policy of the NYTA requires that the air deviation will be prepared by the end user department that requires the service, and the supply chain manager will evaluate and recommend to the CEO, and the CEO will then approve. We are introducing an additional requirement in the delegation of police of authority, which will then require that once the supply chain manager has recommended, the CFO also will be required to support that deviation before it is sent to the CEO for approval. So we think that those will be addressing moving forward. But also, the other challenges in relation to ensuring that where we are going through competitive bidding processes, all the requirements of the Act are complied with to the latter. We think that that day-to-day oversight and management and leadership that will be provided by the senior manager of supply chain that we have appointed, who is very experienced, will assist ensuring that all the checks and balances are in place when we do go for competitive bidding processes.
Chair, just for information purposes, one is just interested in item number 19. You see, when you read it, it says contracts and quotations were awarded to bidders based on points given for criteria that differed from those stipulated in the original invitation for bidding quotations. That is in contravention of the treasury regulations. And one would want to know if that's possible, Chairperson. Probably they could the entity could forward the information in 2 weeks to get who was awarded these contracts. If you can get who was awarded, because probably that particular person knows. If I'm here, I know that I didn't qualify, I get it. How much did I get from that particular contract? And probably how much did I pay to Comrade Saramangena for awarding me that contract? So that we are able to get a sense of people who are defrauding the public purse. We are able to have that information. I think it's a matter of interest that I have, which I think is a matter that also members of the committee would have that interest. I think it's only fair that sometimes we've got to name people so that they are known. We just don't say contract were awarded. We must say contract was awarded to Mesara or to Tapelo Chiwane. That is known that I got it unlawfully. Number 19, if you can talk to that one, CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think on number 19, maybe there's the latter part is that, as I've indicated earlier on, we do have a report that details the nature of the transactions. What was it for? That would be, we have it with us here. It can be, it will be made available within that 2 weeks period that has been referred to. But I think generally, or the issues here would have been the design of the specifications. The specifications are designed by the end user division, but the bid specification committee, where supply chain sits, and is supposed to provide that additional advice on whether the specifications are adequate to ensure that the right service provider is appointed. In that process, our view has been that maybe the advice from the supply chain management unit to end users was not adequate, in the sense that you ended up in a situation where when the bids are received, if you follow the principle that has been provided for either the 80-10 or the 80-20 or the 90-10, you end up in a situation where you would appoint a person who's giving you a lower price, but who technically and functionally can't be able to deliver for you. For an example, a person can say to you that I'm going to train 1,000 young people in 9 provinces with a price of 100,000, but you know that realistically that can be possible. But it's not the supplier's fault. It's that your specification or your criteria should have upfront said that technical ability will be assessed, in which case you will look at whether these people have been done this before, they have done it and things like that.
Okay. No, that's fine. I mean, it comes back to you as an entity, that when you issue out a tender, and after issuing it, you then realize, no, this thing is inadequate. I mean, it's acting and thinking later. That's how best one can call it. At worst, it is cooking a contract until it is tender for somebody else. Right.
Chairperson, maybe just one last point on the matter that we've just raised. It's whether to check on, probably with the chairperson, the executive chairperson, to check whether these issues that emanate from the whole part of the annual report, especially on the contracts, on funds, misappropriation, are these issues that have led the board to take the decision in terms of the CEO, or are there any other managers who were part to
to this misfortune of the entity's ability to perform in terms of the financial governance. Thank you.
Thanks, thanks, Honourable Member. Some of it is, which contained, was part of the information presented to the board, and which constituted part of the disciplinary inquiry. As the inquiry continues, of course, you know, the board will at a later stage be presented with further information, perhaps, in terms of who else perhaps may be implicated. But right now we cannot safely say that we are in a position to either comment or act on any other employee.
I'll come to you, comrade. Let me give Sal and Remfundisi, and then I come to you. Sal?
Thanks, Jefferson. I don't want to be emotional about this this entity, but it's a very good entity. But my questions are quick, short. I'd like to know, I can't pick up when did the entity decided that from the loans, there's no more loans, but they shifted to the grants. I can't pick that up in the, maybe I read it, I don't read it, I read it much. The other thing, Chair, is the NYDA is based in Pretoria. And the gentleman, CEO or CFO, whatever, says that when the young people visited the areas, they insist them with business plans, how to run the plans, if they have. My concern is, what about the rural areas? How did that youth come to Joburg or Pretoria? They haven't got money, they haven't got work. And I saw there's a scale here that says there's officers, provincial officers and advisory boards. I want to know, is there a team that they sent out to the rural areas? And I'm not speaking about Kimberley. I'm not speaking about Kimberley because Kimberley are not Northern Cape.
It's still a rural area.
I'm speaking about the rural areas like Van Wyksley, like the R, like Pof R, Radnir, like that town. So, is there a team who goes there to equip or give presentations to this young people? The last thing, Chair,
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Do you go to the rural areas of Kimberley?
And another thing, yes, it's scale, but there's no numbers, telephone numbers. How to get access to these people in the offices.
Okay. Yeah, let's get a response to that.
Sure. Thanks, Chair. Chair, the decision to shift to grants was made in May 2013 at a strategic planning session after we appointed in April. That's when the decision was taken. Our head office is in Midrand. We continue to be there again for largely cost-cutting measures as well. We had a strategic decision to say that it's not advisable for us to move right now. So we continue to be in Midrand. But having said that, the 14 branches that I mentioned scattered throughout the country, but we also have local youth offices, which are predominantly in rural areas, for example. The CEO will elaborate further. We have a rural youth development strategy that's in place that's going to look at how we reach into rural areas as a priority of the NYDA in the next 3 years. And it will really speak to not only presence, but also programs also delivering products and services like cooperatives development. How do we take cooperatives into rural areas, etc.? So that strategy will look into that. So it is a matter of high priority. We raised with the Appropriations Committee the example of Mbashe Municipality in the Eastern Cape, and the costs implicated with us to really reach out meaningfully to rural areas. To set up and sustain a branch physically, but also with personnel, costs us almost 5 million per annum. But even if we were to devise strategic ways of doing it, whereas we don't build and we rely on municipalities, strengthening partnerships, relationships, even then, we would still may have to fit the bill for personnel, and that relies in rising staff costs. And given where the entity is right now, with Treasury having improved granted us more finance, it becomes difficult to even get into partnerships with local municipalities, which look to have a mutually beneficial or contributing impact. But I'll just allow the CEO to go even deeper into the outreach areas.
No, it's fine. All one was the principle that you indeed.
Thank you, Jefferson. While the NYDA has got an audit opinion, unqualified audit opinion, of course, with findings, it is important that to note that the AG on pages Chairperson, 86 to 87, something like that, makes reference to compliance with regulations. It is important that each entity in government has to comply with regulations and ensure that they do what is prescribed. There are a number of items, some of which Honorable Chilwane referred to earlier on. Instances such as the question of not being fully prepared or not having fully prepared their reports in all material respects, and amongst other things, not taking the necessary disciplinary steps as prescribed by law, but all one wants to know is, what is it that this board is promising this Parliament and this committee they will be doing going forward? And then at paragraph 21 on page 88, there is this issue of the board not having provided the credit regulator, the national credit regulator, with a report. That also falls among the issues of not complying. Then to what extent would the board rectify a situation like that and make sure that in future these simple, ordinary findings are not made against them? Could you take us forward and say, and assure this parliament, assure this committee, that this is the end of the story so far as these matters are concerned? I think, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll deal with the first part and then hand over to the CFO and the CEO on the National Credit Act. Chair, we have really taken up the challenge. We know that when coming on board, we said that we have to position the NYDA as a capable agency that can deliver opportunities to as many young people as possible. We're committed to that task, Chair, and we're going to ensure three things, in fact, in undertaking that: compliance, performance, and enterprise. So that we are creative about making the best use of the resources we have, delivering as much as we possibly can to as many young people as we possibly can. We're also quite realistic, Chair. That's not going to happen overnight. It's a process that will have to take some time because you're dealing with a large institution. When I say large, it's 380 employees that one has got to manage. But we believe that practically the steps we have taken in terms of ethical leadership and good governance, the establishment of the Ethics and Social Committee to formulate and implement the values statement to drive a machine that's able to do institute a work ethos that is quite strong, capable, and ethical will serve us well in the long run. But of course, we can't do it alone, Chair. And I think that's perhaps also why we are here to report. So that's what we are promising, Chair. And as a result, we've reduced key performance areas to 5. We've reduced key performance indicators to 27, so we focus and we remain focused and deliver meaningfully and not just be scattered and fragmented. So on let me then hand over to the CACO to get into the National Credit.
No, on the matter of the National Credit Act, we have addressed that for the current financial year that we're in, or the past financial year that we have passed. But I think just to give comfort to the House is that generally within the organization, a decision has been taken that each division must, amongst the staff members that they have, must give additional responsibilities to one of the staff members to make sure that all laws and regulations that are applicable to their activities are they monitor that is happening on a daily basis, and reports will be prepared, and that is driven from the CEO's office. So over and above just the National Credit Act, all other pieces of legislation that are applicable to the NYDA, there is now that monthly continuous monitoring.
Right. Congratulations.
I think we've spent more time perhaps on supply chain management policy. And so I'm not sure if I have questions. I have observations. But when I've made my brief observation, I'll quickly put a question mark next to it in case they want to respond. I think that the findings of the AG on procurement and contract management indicate 3 things. 1, inadequate oversight by the board. You can't simply rely on the CFO, the supply chain management person, the CEO. The board must take active steps to ensure compliance with SCM policy by constantly reviewing, by calling for reports from those people, interrogating those reports. What I've seen up to now, maybe this board is different, is a hands-off approach. Oh, we've got a CFO. Oh, we've got a supply chain management person. We'll leave it to them. I corner. Responsibility of the board. Comment?
Yep.
Do they agree with me?
We agree fully, Chair. It's well received. And in fact, we've already started to implement measures to do so. We're calling for regular reports. We have an executive management committee that's more active.
I see you are the executive chairperson of the board. What does that mean?
There are executive functions that myself and the deputy chair perform. To a large extent, it's of a strategic and oversight nature. So, for example...
that's fine. Sure. Then merits to what you say, but can't be a hands-off approach. Yeah. All right.
Lack of accountability on the part of management in charge of supply chain management. Up to now, maybe this board is different, and definitely a lack of consequences for contravention of the law.
Sure.
If you take these things, I mean, it's really, we're getting very frustrated here in this committee. It's not only you. If you take all of those things, goods and services above 500,000 rand, no competitive bids, somebody should be responsible and held accountable. Nobody is. Misapplication of criteria. Somebody should be held responsible and punished. The same with your declarations of past supply chain practices. Somebody did that, but nobody's held accountable. So really, Chair, lack of consequences or contraventions. And again, the board must ensure that people are held accountable. Comment.
Noted and welcomed.
And finally, what these things show is a lack of understanding, a lack of proper application of the law and regulations on Treasury. And if you look at the AG's reports, you either didn't understand the law or misapplied the law in the previous 3 financial years. That's just not good enough. Every time now we have an annual report, you have not understood the law or you're misapplying the law. When I talk about the law, I mean the PFMA in particular. So the board, again, must take responsibility for ensuring all its officials, the lowest person in the organization, understand and apply the law, and there must be consequences. Am I lecturing? Comment.
Chair and Honorable Rob, our understanding is that's why we were appointed on the 1st of April to undertake those tasks.
And very, very finally, when I first read this report, I was amazed that you were overachieving your targets. by millions of percentage points. Well, I mustn't exaggerate, but some of your targets overachieved by 500 percentage points, 950 percentage points. How is that possible? Is it not time to review your targets, or are there other reasons why there's been this dramatic overachievement in targets?
Which then enables people to get bonuses. They have overachieved.
I'll ask the CEO to elaborate further. The dilemma is, on the one hand, the targets were reviewed because we were told to do so, because it's unrealistic. But I think it's not a blanket approach that we are taking. For example, we feel the target on career guidance of 700,000 young people is all that we can do, and it's a fair target. But on the other hand, having certain targets we do acknowledge which are too low, we have to review them and make them more realistic. But I think the CEO will elaborate further.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Where you see a significant overachievement in many of our targets, the NYDA can only account, we can only set targets against what we have, the resources that we have. The justification for the overachievement of the targets is related to external funding from donors and probably government departments and parastatals, where they see, for example, our job preparedness program is doing quite well, then they would want to invest further in terms of, with our matric rewrite and so on and so forth. All of those indicators are in a confidence a level from our donors to say we want to make sure that we increase the spread based on the resources that we have, and we are going to give money to the institution. So those funds then come late in the year, but then we have to account for them because money is already in our reserves. That's why you see a significant overachievement in terms of our targets.
Sorry, Jay, through you. Jay, just to give you another example of this year, we will over exceed the target, for example, in business development support. Because, for example, the IDC has shown confidence in working with us and has given us another 10 million, which will result in 878 more young people or entrepreneurs getting vouchers for business development support. So already we will be exceeding our target in this financial year.
So it is not so much the ingenuity, creativity, and hard work of the bonus recipients than that someone external has given you money to. All right, I'm not jealous of those who get bonuses. I see a lot of bonuses. I see a lot of figures every other day.
Well, Chair, that partnership I'm speaking about, for example, the executive manager of corporate partnerships really worked hard to ensure that the IDC gives us that funding. So he would justify that, Chair, if you want.
All right. No, that's fine. I think two things for me before I give you Comrade Deputy Minister, if there's anything you would want to tie down. Just to say that on the World Festival of Youth and Students, which the Public Protector is investigating, I think our interest at this level is how the resources at your disposal, whether it be for this event or for any other event or activity within the NYDA, how they're managed, the accountability thereof. We are a committee that deals with what killed the patient. We look back. Yeah, what killed the patient? Not what we. No. That's somebody else's responsibility. As for the appropriateness and other things, I think those are mere ideological contestations to a large measure. And I don't think that as a committee would want to get into that. However, I think that Executive Chairperson, you and your board and the current management have a responsibility, not only in terms of the mandate of the committee, but an added responsibility vis-a-vis the state of the entity and the standing and image of the entity being in the news for all the wrong reasons and all the other things that we've spoken to. And without saying there's anyone who is wrong or innocent, but the fact that your former chairperson has been arraigned for all manner of things related to the time and the work when you are still here, your former CEO with whom you are currently in dispute, all because of activities that were inconsistent with the laws that you are supposed to uphold, tells you that you had an entity with a leadership that was not focused on doing the right things. And the report of the Auditor General merely confirms that even more. So you therefore have an added responsibility of getting things right and ensuring that the public sees the entity in a positive light. So when you say you're looking for more money from National Treasury, we'll know it is not sought in vain, but it is sought to drive the mandate of the entity. And I think Comrade Roy captured it right from the start, the importance, the strategic significance of this entity in relation to its target market and the place of that constituency within our country, especially in the social and economic context. So it becomes therefore very critical that there is no old man who can be blamed for not addressing the needs and concerns of young people when they themselves, through their own representatives, fail to discharge their responsibilities and obligation to their own. So there is that responsibility that we would want to impress and emphasize on you, and to say that we would want you to come back to this committee, but for good reasons. I say this is how we've managed to do it. Of course, the sun is setting on our life in this committee. We don't know what will happen when it rises again. But whatever the case, the mandate of the committee will remain the same. The faces might change. There is no traditional leader or traditional member of this committee. But the expectation remains that there has to be that accountability. And one does understand, you know, the challenge of assisting young people who would not have the experience, who would not have, you know, any security. Because I'm sure those who have security probably might have to go to the bank and come to the NYTA, because for them to have security means they already have something. So the challenge that arises from that high risk factor, it's a real one. But however, how do we ensure that that risk factor does not become a cover for all manner of wrong things to happen in relation to money going out, so that your money does not become a social grant that goes to people for free, but it is actually able to assist us in this major struggle that we have to ensure that the lives of our people are improved for the better, as was a promise held for them in our struggle for freedom. That's very important to continuously keep in mind. Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the SCOPA. In this case, I will not say the patient is dead. The patient is in the ICU. We've got a new team of doctors and that are resuscitating life in that particular patient. So, yes, there are issues and factors that led to why the patient ended up in the ICU. As you said, that the mandate of SCOPA is to look as to what led to a situation. Myself and the minister, Gordon Shabane, have always been emphasizing element of leadership on management on and controls on NYDA. We did congratulate them for once more achieving an unqualified report, but indeed there are findings that are of concern, and I'm glad that they were sharply raised here in SCOPA meetings, and I think they've taken lessons on when they go back on how to pay attention maximally on each and every one of them, so that the day they come back to SCOPA, it's not a similar picture, and indeed it does begin to indicate improvement and controls and really those who are found to have done wrongdoing, the consequences are also begin to be demonstrated that indeed something is being done on those particular issues. Indeed, the loan book is going to be an issue that will remain with us for a long time, 55 months, that is still an active one. We'll, however, take a note, as you have said earlier, Chairperson, that if every 12 months there could be a report indicating progress made on that particular issue within the 55 months, so that every 12 months we indicate wherever there are successes and progress. It's going to be a difficult one because indeed, you know, there's young people who are downtrodden, most of them. They are in the lower ranks of society who obviously are high risk. No bank will listen to them, and therefore the only available institution available for them is the NYDA, and they'll continuously go to that particular direction of the NYDA. And the NYDA is obligated by the developmental agenda of the country to then respond to that particular challenge of dealing with issues of poverty and inequality in society by beginning to embrace those young people. We have moved from loans, obviously, into grants, but then the loan will not be taken over by the partnership that NYDA has entered into with IDC and also CIFA, where a memorandum of understanding has now been entered, that those that then need that element of over 100,000 will then be channeled to those particular institutions in that partnership. But obviously the preparations of a 24-month type of a program will then be, have been designed to prepare those young people even before they go for higher loans to know what it is at that particular level. And therefore, we'll then really begin to attend to all the issues that have been raised today sharply, and indeed, by the time we come back, hopefully, this will be reduced. However, the matter that needs your attention, that said that in 2 weeks' time, we need to give those particular reports will comply, and ensure, therefore, that indeed they are submitted, and in 2 weeks' time, I'm saying these two issues that you said that you needed to see. And then as I conclude on the loan book, you know, just to share one or two issues in a minute with honourable members here. There are those indeed, you know, young people who have moved on and established themselves in other levels of businesses, and the audit has been done on them. There are those it will be recoverable from their new businesses. However, there are those that were affected by the economic situation, unfortunately, in the world, not just only in our country, and their businesses have indeed slowed down. There's management aspects that are helping them really to go through that turbulence and see if they cannot still be able at a particular point in time when they've gone through the turbulence to for them to be able then to still honor. But then obviously it means the approach will then be different in terms of what they can pay monthly and what they cannot pay monthly, and then the review of the management of the loan. However, there are those that are affected by situations on the ground where, for two example, in the Free State, Mkhayaga municipality, these young people got and won a contract through a bid process, and then they went out, looked for money, NYDA looked at it, and it was something that was working, and then they gave them money. They went to procure fire engines for the municipality. And at the level of the delivery, the municipality cancels the contract. And the people have already paid money to whoever was designing those fire engines. Now, the NYDA acted, took the matter to court, and the sheriff was chasing the young people, and indeed they were acting in terms of, you know, ensuring therefore that those people be hung. They then appealed to the presidency, and the president brought the letter to myself and Minister Chavan to say, hey, what do we do? We then had to go to the NYD and say, remove the sheriff element. Can you enter into negotiations? Because the problem is not the young people, it's the municipality where a new municipal manager came into being and just cancelled the contract summarily in that particular situation, affecting the very same setup that is there. And in one area in Johannesburg municipality in Marlboro next to Alexander, a similar situation happened. You go to the building, my name is there. I've opened the project itself. Nice waste collection type of a venture approved by the City of Johannesburg Economic and the Johannesburg Property Company. Then without the health regulatory elements not being included, when the health authority of Johannesburg realized that there was a waste management company going on next to residences there, they went in there and ordered it to be closed down by the very same municipality. And then at the time of the giving money to these young people, it was a genuine business authorized by Johannesburg municipality and supported even by the provincial government of Gauteng. And it looked very legit, and they started operating, and indeed they were doing well, I must say, until the health regulatory elements comes in. Then they closed. So every case will be looked at on its merit. And I think therefore then the 55 months that we said will be really be pursuing these cases, we'll then keep reporting and say there are those that are affected by certain circumstances, but there are those that will be able to pursue. And where they are insolvent, there's nothing really to collect, we'll also be able to indicate. But that does not mean then we cannot continue to support young people to venture into entrepreneurial levels. And then I'm glad that therefore there was no notion, an expression here to say stop supporting young people. They just say, please, it's public money. Spend it wisely, and we must always explain the expenditure part of it. And if there are controls, please attend to those controls, because this public money, that is not just a social grant, as you said, but it's money that must be accounted for. And the NYDA, therefore, must then build its capacity to ensure, therefore, that it satisfies, not in the in the news for wrong reasons. They are able to inspire young people wherever they are to say, these are your institutions, these are your organizations. Have hope in it, and then when you walk in it, indeed you'll be supported in whatever way, non-financial or financial. Thank you very much, Chair, and then I think we'll then take those issues on board. Thanks.
Okay, thanks very much, Auditor General's Office. As always, thank you. Comrades, you'll get the report from the Northern Cape in preparation for next week, Wednesday. And Tuesday, remember, it's PRASA, and then Wednesday, it's the Kimberley Mental Hospital issue. We'll get the copies from Dombey. Thank you very much, Executive Chairperson, and good luck.
I think I'm going to go to the next one.
Thank you.